Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
I'm in the old imperial capital of Japan, Kyoto, at the massive Tōfukuji Temple complex. Tōfukuji is one of the major Rinzai Zen temples in Japan, and it attracts crowds of sightseers every day. But I'm here for one of the smaller sub-temples, one that few know about and even fewer visit. My guide is Yoshio Kurahashi. Born and bred in Kyoto, he's a master of the Japanese bamboo flute, the shakuhachi, and he knows this path well. We arrive at a wooden gateway with the temple's name outlined in white characters. The three kanji read Myōanji, Temple of Light and Darkness. Underneath, in smaller characters, is written Original Dojo of the Shakuhachi. We've arrived at the spiritual home of the Japanese Zen Shakuhachi tradition, the temple of the Zen priests of nothingness.
This is a statue of a very famous Shakuhachi monk named Kichiku or Kyochiku. He found Japanese Shakuhachi.
So he is the first shakuhachi player in Japan?
Yes, 700 years ago. And it's a treasure for all of shakuhachi players.
Hello and welcome to Encounter on ABC Radio National. I'm Jeff Wood and this is the story of the Zen priests of nothingness and of the music they created. It's also a story about grief and loss, and of learning to cope with emotional turmoil. Japan in the 16th century was in the grip of civil war. Warlords fought each other for the right to rule, and bandits roamed the countryside. And yet, out of this disorder came a music of great beauty and rare spiritual power, the Honkyoku, the sacred music of Zen Buddhism. Played on the Japanese bamboo flute, the shakuhachi, it was more than just music. It was a spiritual practice developed by a sect of wandering monks. Shakuhachi Grand Master Riley Lee.
These beggar priests were called komoso. So just means priest, and komo means the grass mat. It's a bit like the swag. They had grass mats. They would, you know, go around, and that's what they slept on, their grass mats. So that's why they were called komoso. Then later on, approaching the 16th and perhaps even into the 17th century, the komoso started calling themselves komuso, which... It was a bit more upmarket, I suppose, the name, because instead of just the grass mat priests, they changed the characters, and even though it sounded like komoso, it meant something totally different. It meant the komu means nothingness or emptiness, the priests of emptiness, the priests of nothingness, and both the word ko and mu refer to very Zen Buddhist ways of thinking or philosophy, terminology.
I'm Margaret Tung, and I've been learning shakuhachi for 8 years. I think the piece that means a lot to me is Tamuke. Tamuke is a piece that's normally played at funerals, and the name of the piece literally means hand gesture. It's a particular hand gesture which one uses to express gratitude. It's the two hands clasped together, placed in front of one's chest. And I find that it's a very beautiful piece, and I find that really helped me in times of grief. So the piece expresses gratitude for the loved one who departed. And another translation is safe passage. It's kind of you're sending someone off, hopefully to a safe place.
We all know the power music has to reach into our innermost feelings, to bring us joy, to make us cry. Memory, emotion and music are deeply entwined and often seem to have power over us. In fact, sometimes we can feel like we're hostages to our emotional life. But what if we were able to use music not only to arouse emotions, but to tame them? In fact, what if music could help to heal emotional trauma? Music that was itself born out of great violence and strife. Shakuhachi Master Jim Franklin.
The Komuso were members of a particular sect or order of Zen Buddhism, what's now called the Fuke sect. This particular sect was composed largely of old samurai who had been rendered masterless by war, by death of their warlord and so on, and given the code of honour, couldn't then attach themselves to some other master, some other warlord, so ended up being more or less unemployed and had to do something with the rest of their lives. Many of the so-called komuso were drawn from the ranks of these masterless samurai, and they took up the bamboo flute as being their emblem and one of the main aspects of the form of Zen practice and meditation practice that they were doing. The pieces that they created were intended not to be performed or thought of as pieces of music, but specifically as a form of meditation. These pieces were considered to be pieces for meditation, and the instrument wasn't even considered to be a musical instrument. It was often called, in translation, a tool of spiritual practice, as opposed to a musical instrument. So the monks that were members of this order were wandering, mendicant monks, using the shakuhachi as a tool of enlightenment, as a tool of spiritual practice.
The shakuhachi is a very simple instrument, although incredibly difficult to play. An end-blown bamboo flute as long as your arm with five finger holes and no reed. It arrived from China as part of the imperial court music around the 9th century. By the 13th century in Japan, a repertoire of sacred music for the shakuhachi began to appear, along with the rise of Zen Buddhism and the appearance of the first wandering monks, the Komuso. After many years, these monks formed themselves into a sect belonging to one of the main schools of Japanese Zen, Rinzai. This was the Fuke sect, named after the Tang Dynasty Chinese priest known to the Japanese as Fuke. By 1677, the Fuke sect of wandering monks with their basket-like hats, white robes and short swords was numerous enough to be granted official recognition by the shogun. And in the following centuries, a core repertoire of Zen shakuhachi pieces was established, with titles like Empty Sky, Heart Moon, and Yearning for the Bell. As Riley Lee explains, the bell in that title was both real and a symbol of enlightenment.
Well, Yearning for the Bell, which in Japanese can be translated as reibo. Rei is the bell, and it's a little handbell that are used often in Buddhist activities, the chanting of the sutras and so forth. You frequently hear these handbells in temples. And bo means yearning, so bell yearning. And this relates or refers to the legendary founder of the tradition of shakuhachi playing as spiritual practice, Fuke. Now, Fuke himself, the Chinese Zen Buddhist priest who lived in the 9th century, he existed, but the connection between Fuke and this is the Japanese pronunciation of his name, the relationship between Fuke and the Shakuhachi is a bit tenuous. But Fuke apparently did teach with a bell. You know, you'd ask him a question, so the legend goes, and he would frequently just answer by ringing the bell. You didn't ask him a question, he'd ring the bell. So the bell was a big thing. And so the legend goes, or at least one version of the legend, is when he died, one of his students, his disciples, kind of overcome with the experience, went into a trance, and in the trance went to a bamboo forest, cut a piece of bamboo, fashioned a flute out of the piece of bamboo, and played that bamboo, and that bamboo was, of course, the first Shakuhachi, and played his bamboo flute in a way to evoke his teacher's bell. And in this instance, and in fact, when we refer to yearning for the bell becomes a metaphor of Fuke and his teaching. So we're not just yearning to hear his bell, we're not yearning for the sound of the bell or for a physical bell, but in a sense yearning for the teachings of Fuke, for what Fuke embodied. In other words, the bell is a metaphor for enlightenment. So we're yearning for enlightenment.
Riley Lee. Known as the Honkyoku, or original pieces, the Shakuhachi compositions created by the Komiso were more than just music. They were a part of a spiritual practice, a Zen practice, and the act of playing them came to be called Sui Zen, blowing meditation.
Sui Zen again comes from two Chinese characters. The first character, Sui, is an easy one. It just means blow, blowing, to blow. And the second character is actually pretty easy. Zen really means meditation. So when you say Zen Buddhism, you really are saying meditation Buddhism. And Zen practitioners do the act of Zazen, which means seated meditation. Za means seated. So Zazen means seated meditation. Sui Zen means blowing meditation.
Riley Lee was the first non-Japanese to be granted the title of Dai Shihan, Grand Master of the Shakuhachi. His teacher is one of Japan's greatest players, Katsuya Yokoyama. The more I learned about Sui Zen, blowing meditation, the more the idea took hold of me. I'd always thought music to be a spiritual force in its own right, and here was a major tradition of music developed over centuries in Japan which shared this view. At its height in the Edo period, the Fuke sect could claim 140 temples. But in 1871, the order was abolished, and a year later, playing the Shakuhachi as a spiritual practice was made illegal. This was part of a much wider revolution in Japanese society. The shogunate, which had ruled since feudal times, had collapsed, and the emperor restored to power. It was a time of great uncertainty. And the Fuke sect, who were one of the few organizations permitted to travel freely around Japan, were suspected by a nervous government of harboring spies.
One of the legendary aspects of the story of the development of the Honkyoku and the Fuke sect and the Komuso was that the priests of nothingness, these wandering monks, often were not necessarily what they seemed. The bottom end of the instrument, made from the root node of the piece of bamboo, where it actually grows out of the ground, is a pretty hard, pretty solid thing, and if you had it hitting your head, you'd notice. So the Komuso were effectively, or de facto, carrying a weapon. They were the only class, apart from the samurais, who were then able or permitted to carry a weapon of any form. Of course, it wasn't called a weapon, but de facto it was. So we had a class of wandering monks armed, and these wandering monks ended up wearing what looks like a huge basket over their head, which was for the purpose of obscuring the identity, promoting an idea of there not being an identifiable self, a no-self, as it were. So the basket hat which one sometimes sees in Japanese wood carvings and so on, effectively rendered them faceless, which made them admirable spies. Carrying a weapon, being incognito, being monastics, clerics, able to go anywhere they liked. So this produced all sorts of problems politically, and eventually the Fuke sect was banned from practicing the Shakuhachi. So it went very much into the underground. This is now at the end of the warlord periods of Japan, shortly before the opening towards the West.
You're listening to Encounter on ABC Radio National, and we're tracing the rise of the Zen priests of nothingness in Japan. These monks developed a body of sacred music over a period of 800 years, Zen pieces for shakuhachi, known as the honkyoku. As we've heard, the Fuke sect was banned and their temples confiscated late in the 19th century. But their music lives on. In Japan today, there are students from all over the world who've come to learn the shakuhachi. Part of the enduring fascination of the music is the way it transmits basic Buddhist philosophy, like the concept of emptiness.
The Sanskrit term is shunyata, translates more or less into English as emptiness. This emptiness is, in the original Buddhist terms, emptiness of an abiding self, emptiness of something which you can say is in a perpetual, eternal, identifiable thing which sits on its own, is totally independent of everything else. And what we're not saying in asserting that is that there is nothing at all. It's not saying nothingness. It's not saying nothing exists. It's saying that everything exists in potential with itself in relation to everything else. So there is no sense in which we can separate one thing out and give it identity to the exclusion of everything else. Emptiness is then this potential, this the side of form, the other side of form, which contains all things, contains all potential, all aspects of it. We approach this experience of shunyata, the realization that that is actually our innermost nature, our self-nature, if you like, using a Zen term, through various meditative practices, one of them being working with the breath in various meditative traditions. One of those, again, being, for instance, working with the shakuhachi through what's called sui zen, blowing zen, as opposed to sitting zen. Katsuya Yokoyama is one of Japan's greatest shakuhachi masters. On a warm spring day in Tokyo, I took a train and travelled to his apartment in the suburb of Nakano. Yokoyama-san's wife and daughter welcomed me at the door, along with two other respected shakuhachi players, Kaoru Kakizakai and Christopher Yomei Blaisdell, who acted as our interpreter. Through the windows, we could see sakura, pink cherry blossom, in the grey streets below. I asked Sensei about this Zen paradox of finding the self through emptiness. He answered me with a phrase I hadn't heard before. Honin no kyoku, bringing forth your own true sound.
My teacher, Watazumi Do, said honkyoku is a piece where, in the Japanese, honne o haku, in other words, bringing forth your own true sound, your personal own true sound. There's an expression in Japanese, honne tatemai, tatemai honne, which means the appearance and the reality. And the reality is honne, the actual sound of yourself. So hon means the essence of yourself.
Born in 1934, Katsuya Yokoyama is the head of the Chikushinkai Shakuhachi Guild, founder of the International Shakuhachi Study Center in Japan, and one of the greatest living Shakuhachi masters. He learned Shakuhachi of the Kinkō school from his grandfather and his father, Rampo Yokoyama, and from the renowned teacher of modern times, Watazumi Dō.
There's a saying in Shakuhachi called Ichion Jōbutsu, which means enlightenment in the single tone. And my teacher, Watazumi Dō, said that such was impossible. It was impossible to attain enlightenment in a single note. I think probably that is so, but on the other hand, I also feel that it is sometimes possible. It shows how important the single tone is in playing music. But in my case, I've not attained that at all yet, so I don't know.
The idea of Ichion Jōbutsu, enlightenment in a single tone, has been central to the practice of Shakuhachi player and author Christopher Yome Blasdell. Originally from Texas, Christopher studied Shakuhachi with the Japanese living national treasure Goro Yamaguchi in 1972, receiving a teaching license and the professional name Yome in 1984. Christopher, you've written a book which has an English title, The Single Tone. Can you explain the phrase and its importance, please?
Well, the single tone comes from a phrase that's famous amongst Shakuhachi players, Yokoyama Sensei mentioned it in his interview, Ichion Jōbutsu, meaning attaining enlightenment in the single tone. This harks back to the idea of the Komuso wandering monks, the members of the Fuke Zen sect, who purportedly could play one tone and attain enlightenment just with one tone. But on a bigger scale, this sort of shows that within the microcosmos is the macrocosm. In other words, within the one, there's the all. And so you don't need a lot of things. You don't need a lot of electronic devices. You don't need a lot of money. You don't need a lot of fame. You just need this one sort of concentrated idea, this concentrated willpower. You could call it a tone. You could call it anything. But it's just a matter of concentrating everything you have on one focus and bringing that to fruition.
Enlightenment in a single tone, Ichion Jōbutsu. In Buddhist practice, even sound can have Buddha nature. For most of us, it's uncommon to link music and enlightenment. Music is for pleasure, entertainment, relaxation, or for worship, praise, or remembrance. But according to Yokoyama Sensei, in Japan, the search for enlightenment through the sound of the shakuhachi was more than just an expression of Japanese Buddhism. It was also a way of dealing with great trauma. The trauma associated with the violent life of the samurai, killing and being killed.
People who became komuso were samurai, and in the Edo period, the samurai had a very strict social ranking. You know, they could legally kill people. I'm putting a little background into this. So it's my belief that the samurai were tired of the killing, tired of, you know, always cutting up people and killing them, and also tired of the strict regimentation and the ranking system, hierarchical ranking system of the Edo period. Whereas if they became monks, they attained a kind of freedom and could think about really what to look for in life and in spiritual enlightenment. So there was probably an element of wanting to be saved, wanting to be saved from this lifestyle, which is a very, you know, Buddhist way of looking. And
a chance to seek for enlightenment.
You're listening to Encounter on ABC Radio National, and we're in search of the sacred music of the Zen priests of nothingness in Japan. As I left Sensei's apartment that afternoon, I was reminded of another celebrated Japanese who had wondered publicly about the samurai way of life and death. The Seven Samurai, directed by Akira Kurosawa in 1954, is regarded as one of the finest movies ever made. Set in the 16th century, the age of warring states, the film follows the story of a farming village forced to recruit seven masterless samurai warriors to combat bandits who are planning to steal the village's crops. Even though the bandits are defeated, the ending of the story is bittersweet. While the villagers celebrate their victory, the three remaining samurai are left to wonder about the price their dead colleagues have paid, and to ponder their own uncertain fate. Kurosawa's point here is that the future belongs to the villagers. They represent the direction that history is moving, to a settled and routine life. The samurai are being left in the past. But we know now that some of these samurai did have a future, one where they swapped swords for bamboo flutes, and where the way of the warrior was replaced by the path of the monk. In time, they became known as the Komuso, the Zen priests of nothingness. And it makes perfect sense to believe that these former samurai-turned-monks did want to atone for a life of violence and pain. Roni Nyogetsu Selden calls himself a modern-day komuso. He studied in Kyoto with Yodo Kurahashi, and in 1980 was made Daishihan, or Grand Master, in the Kinko School of Shakuhachi. Roni lives in New York City, where he teaches in his dojo and at university level, and much of his practice involves healing people physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Komuso, traditionally in the Tokugawa period, were priests of emptiness or priests of nothingness who would try and take upon problems or illnesses of families or individuals upon themselves, and through the plane of shakuhachi, bring relief or bring healing, or sometimes just make people feel good with their art or with their instrument. But perhaps more than that, they also were trying to attain enlightenment or attain nirvana in addition to their zazen practice or sitting meditation practice. By playing shakuhachi, we call it sui zen, is what the komuso did, and they used the instrument, the shakuhachi, as a religious instrument, even more than as a musical instrument.
Well, there aren't that many of them left anymore, but I have seen photographs of the traditional komuso, the monk, and they're quite remarkable looking because they have a basket-shaped hat which they wear over their face, over their head. What's the point of that? What's the purpose of that?
It's quite an interesting visual image, in addition to being psychologically interesting, because when you cover your face or you cover your identity, you're also suppressing the ego, because when you play, people don't know who you are. And that's what the basket primarily was for, is to batten down or to suppress the ego. It's called a tengai, It's for anonymity as well as to suppress the ego. And interestingly enough, in Tokugawa history, it led to legends of Komso really being spies.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? There's this undercurrent of violence beneath the concept of the monk, because I understand that historically the Komiso were often masterless samurai who couldn't be samurai anymore and decided to join the monasteries and become monks. And so you have this very interesting change of roles from a man of violence to a man of peace. Do you think that that's had an influence on the repertoire of sound, the music that they've created, because the music is a very peaceful music?
Well, that's a very interesting question and an interesting analysis. But you have to remember from about 1609 to 1868, there were hardly any uprising or any... Japan was unified and kept so disciplined that even though they were warriors, there were no wars to fight. So more than they were actual killing machines, as warriors, they were trained in the martial arts, and they had that potential for violence. But the idea of the martial arts is to use it only defensively. In a way, they're being reborn as shakuhachi players or Buddhist priests who are trying to reach enlightenment. Is one of the interesting contrasts, I think, of Japanese society, how there could always be this undercurrent of the samurai underneath the priest's garb.
Ronnie Selden plays the Zen Honkyoku pieces in hospitals in New York City for the aged and the infirm. He's drawing on an old tradition where the honkyoku are linked to the notion of safe passage. One such passage is childbirth.
What my teacher taught me about sanya is if a komso is helping a new mother-to-be with a safe and easy childbirth, the first thing that he does is pour rice through the shakuhachi. And I have to say, I mean uncooked rice, because one time somebody asked me, well, doesn't it get all sticky if you put it through the flute? So indeed, it's uncooked rice through the flute, and then to cook the rice during the labor. And then when the new mother has the child for the safe passage of the placenta and the afterbirth, the new mother would eat the rice that was cooked. And during the labor, the komso would play the piece, probably not right into the, you know, to the woman who's going into labor's area, probably from another room, just to try and make the whole experience as pleasant as possible.
We can see, in fact, childbirth more symbolically as well, because the honkyoku are linked to the notion of safe passage, aren't they?
Yes, probably even more than any other type of healing. At bottom line is almost all of the honkyoku can be considered used for the safe passage of the spirit into its next incarnation. And that's not surprising when you consider that Buddhism in Japan is almost exclusively used for funereal ceremonies, for birth and marriage, getting into a good college or blessing your new Toyota, you go to a Shinto shrine. But for safe passage, for funerals, you go to your Buddhist temple. It gives you a sense of serenity and calmness in your own spirit, your own center, as well as people listening to you. And if you're playing it for specifically for safe passage, then hopefully it will help the people listening as well as yourself. I feel very privileged to have done quite a few of these types of performances after 9/11 here in New York City. I lived less than 20 blocks from Ground Zero. And in addition to being able to help a lot of the people there by for 3 months driving them from Ground Zero to the hotels at night, I was also able to play these honkyoku at different spiritual ceremonies. One was of all different denominations held at Union Square, and one was up at the Buddhist Church of New York at Riverside Drive, and so in a number of different places. And I felt a lot of peace from playing it, as well as people who heard it.
I'm Margaret Tung, and I've been learning shakuhachi for 8 years. So I'm just getting my shakuhachi out, and I'm just going to play ro, getting ready to play my piece.
I'm in Margaret Tung's Lightfield house in Leichhardt, Sydney. She's a student of the shakuhachi, but for her, as for the original komisou, it's more than just music. It's a meditation and a healing practice.
Soon after I started the instrument, I also started learning meditation. And it kind of goes hand in hand with meditation. And I normally practice in the evening. I often think of it as my evening meditation, actually, because I normally meditate first thing in the morning. And so when I get a chance to practice shakuhachi, that's my evening meditation. It kind of takes you to a quiet and still place, I think. Yeah. I think the piece that means a lot to me is Tamuke. Tamuke is a piece that's normally played at funerals. And the name of the piece literally means hand gesture. It's a particular hand gesture which one uses to express gratitude. It's the two hands clasped together, placed in front of one's chest. I find that it's a very beautiful piece, and I find that really helped me in times of grief. So the piece expresses gratitude for the loved one who departed. And another translation is safe passage. It's kind of you're sending someone off, hopefully to a safe place. It's a piece I played when I lost my father and when I lose a dear friend. I find that because in those times there is nothing one could do, so to speak, and I just find playing Tamuke helped for me to probably express my love for my friend or my father. Yeah. And recently a friend of mine lost her sister, and because her sister was in China when she died and my friend is in Sydney, we, a few close friends, got together and sort of have our own little ceremony. And even though I didn't know her sister, and I played Tamuke when we got together, and my friends said they found the sound of the shakuhachi really spiritual, and they were moved by the piece, and it kind of helped in times of grief.
The Zen priests of nothingness may have been disbanded 130 years ago, but their music continues to be taught and played by people like Ronnie Nyorgetsu Selden and Margaret Tung. For a final glimpse of the komisou tradition, we're heading back to Japan, back to the ancient imperial capital of Kyoto, to one of the last remaining temples of the Fuke sect.
My name is Yoshio Kurahashi, a shakuhachi player. I'm living in an old area called Rashomon in Kyoto, old city.
We're in your studio where you practice and teach. Beautiful studio with tatami mats on the floor and low tables. And I see shakuhachis resting in a stand in the corner. And on the wall is a Japanese kanji or character of mu. Can you tell me about that?
It's a calligrapher of mu. It means nothing. It was drawn by Mr. Konoe. He was a prime minister of Japan just before the World War II. And the name of my shakuhachi school is Muju-an. It means a small hut, small house, nobody lives, nothing.
Kurahashi Sensei is a renowned shakuhachi master who studied as a boy with his father Yodo Kurahashi in Kyoto. He lives close to where the Rashomon used to stand, the main gateway of the ancient capital, made world famous in 1951 by the film director Akira Kurosawa and his film called Rashomon. We've one more stop to make, Myoanji Temple. As we walk along the gravel path to the temple, I notice a large rock with two characters, kanji, carved into it. Kurahashi Sensei explained they were the characters for Sui Zen, blowing meditation. It was the same inscription that Riley Lee had come across years before.
The first times I became acquainted with this word was a very remarkable, quite striking. I guess it's a statue. It's a big rock in which these words are carved. And this rock is found in Kyoto, in one of the few remaining temples of the Komuso, the priests of nothingness. This temple is called Meianji, or other people pronounce it Myoanji. And Meianji, it's interesting, the words, again, the Chinese characters, Meianji, three of them. Ji means temple. The Mei and the An means light and dark. So the temple of light and dark. Here we are getting into that world of relativity. It's an acknowledgement that this is where we are. In Meianji, we still find a center, in a sense, a heart where people come to practice the act of sui zen, of blowing zen.
We arrive at the door to the temple and meet the head priest, Eko Hirasomi. Kurahashi-san then takes me to an alcove in the main hall.
This is a statue of a very famous shakuhachi monk named Kichiku or Kyochiku. He found Japanese shakuhachi.
So he is the first shakuhachi player in Japan?
Yes, 700 years ago. This statue is very famous as a statue. And it's a treasure for all of shakuhachi players.
Do many shakuhachi players come here to see the statue?
Yes. So maybe it's the only concert, because players play for this statue, not for audience. So audience always watch the players' backs.
So players come here and play for the statue?
Yes, they dedicate their sound to this statue, not for audience.
The priest actually has got a thick booklet to explain Myoanji. However, to simplify the explanation of the name, there is a priest called Fuke Genji. When he chants, I can't chant, but the first character of the chanting is Myo, and the second character of the chant is An. So we call it Myo-an-ji, and that's 9th century.
Myo-to-rai-ya, myo-to-da. An-to-rai-ya, an-to-da. Shihou-hachimen-rai-ya, sen-pu-da. Koku-rai-ya, ren-ka-da.
And I just to add that myo means bright, an means dark.
So bright, dark temple.
Muzukashi.
Muzukashi.
A little deeper.
I see. Yes, I can see that.
Despite Eko-san's willingness to help, I began to realize that the barrier of language was going to be a real problem. I glanced over at a scroll on the wall nearby. The Japanese calligraphy said, "Flower opens." It was a hint that just as a flower has its reasons for living that might be inexpressible, so here in the temple of light and darkness, I was facing concepts that lay beyond words. I was face to face with an emptiness I couldn't understand. As our conversation continued to circle helplessly, it was clear that my search for the Zen priests of nothingness had come to a full stop. But as we all know, a full stop isn't necessarily an end. On ABC Radio National, you've been listening to Encounter. My thanks to everyone who helped and guided me in my search for the Zen priests of nothingness, with special thanks to my guests Katsuya Yokoyama and Christopher Yome Blasdell in Tokyo, Eko Hirosomi and Yoshio Kurahashi in Kyoto, Ronnie Nyogetsu Selden in New York City, and Riley Lee, Margaret Tung and Jim Franklin in Australia. Thanks also to Kaoru Kakizakai and to Christopher Blasdell and Asako Izawa for help interpreting and translating. I'll have a list of contributors on our website at abc.net.au/religion and then look for the link to Encounter. You'll also find a transcript there with music details and some links for those of you who want to learn more about the Shakuhachi and the Komiso. Sound production this week was by Judy Rapley. And I'm Jeff Wood. And I'll leave you with the hope of enlightenment in a single tone.
ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.